Welcome to the Round 2, your Supercoach Coach podcast. It's good to have footy back. Obviously didn't record the show last week, and this week we're going to go through our teams together, and then we've actually fielded a few questions from Twitter, our forum, and Facebook, so it's a bit of a different format, and hopefully we can fill the whole show with content derived from social media questions. So we're going to give that a shot this week, and if that keeps working out, we'll keep with that format moving forward. Mark, are you excited about fielding some questions?
I am, mate. We're both pretty happy this week that both our teams won on the weekend, but Bombers are above Geelong on the ladder, so I'm extra happy.
Yep. Of course, you'd bring that up. So that brings us to our teams. I think our listeners like knowing how we're doing, so we haven't revealed our teams on the podcast yet. Mark, do you want to kick us off and tell everyone who you went with?
Sure. So I am ranked 19,522nd at the moment. I was ranked 50,000th after week one and was struggling a fair bit, but pretty happy in the top 20,000 and on my way up. Backline, I had Goddard and Deledio, very happy about that. Then Broughton, who's not so happy about. Malcheski seems like a good pick so far. Then Lake, Clark and Bug with Morris and Alice on the bench. Pretty happy with all of those players after the weekend. They all look like getting games, so that's pretty good. Midfield, I went Pendlebury, which I'm very happy about, Ablett and Selwood. And then I took a risk and went Daisy at M4. I think you might have done the same, Marcus.
Yep, I did.
Yeah, he's only scored 95 and 100 in the first two games. Really hasn't had a lot of the ball, but he's my one unique, hopefully goes on a crazy run at some stage. Then I have Magna, McDonald, Ledger and Scheel. Ledger's probably the only iffy one out of that, missing first week and then scoring 17 as a sub on the weekend. In the rucks, I went for Mumford as my first ruck, then Giles, Redden, and Stevenson. I'm kind of regretting Mumford a little bit, especially after he missed on the weekend. I wish I had Naito Nui in there, but if Mumford plays this weekend, I'll just stick fat with that one. Forward line, I went with Franklin, Chapman, and Martin. Happy with the first two, but Martin underperforming a bit. Then I went a bit risky with both Dangerfield and Sidebottom. Hopefully they can show a bit of improvement. They haven't been too bad so far. Then I picked the mid-pricer, Paul Pleasure. Kennedy as my F7 with Smith and Dixon on the bench. So overall pretty happy with the 30 players. I know Broughton, Martin, Dixon and Ledger probably underperforming a little bit. Maybe Stevenson as well. But generally feel like I got a good balance, and after Lake showed up on the weekend, yeah, feeling pretty good. How about you, Marcus? I hear that you've scored 1 point more than me so far.
Yeah, 4,334 total points puts me 1 point ahead and about 200 ranking points in front of you. Off a really bad week last week, but this week rebounded. I scored 2,300 with a Mumford donut, which really upset about. I run a football website. I should be on to not having donuts like that are avoidable, so a bit upset about that. But I'll go through my team now. I went with a backline structure. I didn't like, you know, backline premiums are inconsistent and generally a low scoring, so I only went with two bonafide premiums in Goddard and Deledio, and I've taken quite a cheap defensive line as a result. Malcheski and Lake as my two mid prices. I went with Clark and Bauer as two former best 22 players that were underpriced, and then playing one rookie on field, going with Ellis, Morris, and Bug to round out that defensive line. In the midfield, I've gone with Ablett and Selwood as my two locks. I have Dale Thomas, as Mark mentioned. I really like him as a selection. I think I've mentioned quite a few times that 130 streak that he went on after 8 games. Again, it was a bit concerning that he hasn't been getting quite the amount of disposals that I would have hoped for, but you know, when his third quarter mark, it was absolutely sensational, and that's the type of stuff where you go, I want him in my team, and hopefully he can pick up the disposal count and he'll be scoring some bigger points for us. I got Andrew Swallow as my M3 actually as well. Also been a bit disappointing the last 2 weeks. I mean, he's still averaging 109, but last week on 90 and this week we're 128, and started really slowly against GWS and finish on 128, but a bit iffy on that, but he's an easy draw, so I'm hoping he'll come through. And then I've got Magna, Scheel, Smith and McDonald. I think that's pretty standard. Ruck line standard as well. Everybody knows about the R2 strategy. Mumford, Charles, Redden, and Stephenson. And then forward line.
Marcus, was that Devon Smith in the midfield?
Yep, Devon Smith in the midfield, not Clay Smith.
Yep.
And then in the forward line, because I've pretty much stinted my back line, I didn't have to play a single rookie there. So I've got Franklin, Chapman, Goods, and Martin. Martin's the only concerning one. Goods, I'm actually pretty happy with. And I know on the podcast I've been talking him down throughout the preseason, but Indiana.
I've got to say, you made some posts last week that Goods was a terrible pick and you were shattered that you picked him. But a week later, you've changed your mind.
Yeah, I have. And that was just, I needed to pump some money somewhere. And I thought out of Goods, Pav, and Fife that I'd go with Goods. And so far, that's looking the best option of the three. So I'm pretty happy there. Martin, we'll talk about just in a bit. I think just the next question. So we'll leave that for now. But Dangerfield, Sidebottom, and Paul Plesia, similar, same as Mark there. So both of us have quite heavy mid-price teams, and it's why we're so happy this week, because the mid-price strategy is came home this week, and the rookies, and to be honest, we'd talked about it in the preseason, so I'm not going like I told you so, but that there was reason behind us pushing out that mid-prices, limit ourselves to a rookie exposure, because GWS rookies, even though had a really good first round against Sydney last week, really struggled, and you can see their style of play led to a lot of low disposal efficiencies, Mark, and Supercoach scores were quite poorly affected by that. So
every time they got the ball, they just had nowhere to kick it to, and the North kept getting the ball back on the wing, so that might be a feature of GWS's play going forward. Mm. It's interesting how long a week is in football. I know after week one, you were ranked even lower than me, and we were both thinking, gee, we've had a horrible start here. All the mid prices are failing, and all the GWS rookies look amazing. And so if we had have had a podcast last week, we might have given you totally different information than we would this week.
Yeah.
Which is great, because last week a lot of us were just saying, let's just hold on a week. Let's get a bit more information before we make any crazy decisions. And I hope people did hold off on trading, because it seems like it was the way to go.
And that's partly the reason we didn't do a show as well, because we didn't really want to get stuck, you know, sucked into that round one hysterics. So we'll head straight on to our Twitter questions then now. Oh, sorry, Twitter, forum, and Facebook, and hopefully we'll be continuing that. So the first one, Twitter from @NairoJoby. Is it better to upgrade non-playing rookies or get rid of underperforming players, i.e. Yagmore, Bauman versus Broughton, Martin? Mark, how do you feel about that at the moment?
That one's actually pretty clear to me, mate. You really need your rookies to be making money. So if it looks like your rookies are not going to be playing, then I'd be getting rid of them. An exception might be Couch, who probably looks like coming into the Melbourne side this week or very soon. But as a general rule, you really need to be focused on making sure that your rookies are making money at this stage in the season. It's where you can probably make the biggest difference to your overall ranking, I think. And I think a lot of people do get sucked into trading out a Martin, who's had maybe a couple of bad weeks, rather than fixing the rookie problems, because Martin's actually on the ground. But at the end of the season, I think that fixing the rookies this week is going to have a bigger impact on your overall result. What do you think?
Yeah, I agree with you there, except I think Yagmore and Bauman are clearly problems that you have to fix on field, but there's some people who are looking at, and we're going to talk about more of these players, but like Dixon, for example, is one that I think we will argue is sort of borderline case, that maybe if you can use that money to greater effect to fix another part of your ground, then maybe you might even downgrade Broughton and Martin if you were worried to fix a problem elsewhere. But definitely for cases that like Yagmore and Bauman, I definitely think that those should be corrected before you even look at Broughton and Martin.
So we may as well move on to the next question from the Hairy Cat on Twitter, which asks, Cripps and Dixon have been terrible as forward rookies. Is it worth doing a sideways trade to Malera and Smets? So this is getting into that sort of more iffy range, because Cripps and Dixon have actually been playing. They just haven't scored so well. So Dixon was pretty shocking in round one, but I felt like he was close to doing something. Like he almost stuck a couple of marks. Maybe he could have kicked a goal when he kicked a point. I really felt like he wasn't too far away. Then he was made the sub on the weekend and actually scored more in a quarter as a sub than he did in a full game the first week. The Eagles were pretty good round one, so I think you can give him a little bit of space. I think he'll get an extra game because of how well he did as a sub on the weekend. The concern is on the couch last night, they showed that the Doggies don't necessarily have disposal skills, and they showed Dixon just kicking it straight over the head of his teammate. So even though he was only on for one quarter, he still made on the couch, which I thought was a bit concerning. But I expect him to score reasonably well and probably average 50 or 60. So I'm not sure that he's worth a trade. I guess it depends on how much you rate Malira and Smets.
In the Harry Katz particular question, I probably wouldn't say that Cripps and Dixon are worth trading to Malira and Smets. I think the value gain from that compared to how much not having that trade will hurt later on in the season is probably going to see that trade not worthwhile making. I think everybody sees that we have 24 trades this year and then probably thinking that's a lot to play with. And that's a general theme that I'm seeing running through, particularly during, you know, round one where everybody was trying to make excuses for trading. You got to remember that we're going to have to side swap around the buys. We've never been like forced to side swap around the buys like we'll have to avoid donuts. So really careful on this one. I think Cripps and Dixon, if they're both on ground, if they're both good chances to keep getting games, that Malera and Smets don't have scoring potential anywhere near high enough in differential to be worth even thinking about trading. So no from me.
Moving on. If out of any of them, I think Cripps to Malera is probably the better one because
you net money, don't you?
Yeah, because Cripps is that extra. He's 170 or something, so you do pocket 50,000 out of that. And Cripps was relatively poor on the weekend. Malera's definitely looked better so far.
Yep. Now, on to Dr. Bones from the forum. Is Ledger to Kennedy worth the trade or will it all even out in the end? So, Mark, you have Ledger. How do you feel about him as a pick? I know even though he missed round one and even though he started as a sub, that he has shown enough throughout the preseason and even in that game to suggest that, you know, he will continue getting games and he does, in fact, have decent enough scoring potential to keep, even though, you know, statistically, he looks like he should go.
It was interesting that he was a sub on the weekend. I really, really thought that Nunes would be the sub in his first game. That just shows that they really rate Ledger as being a worthwhile sub. He had 8 touches but only scored 17 Supercoach points. I'm really close to trading him out this week just because I think that if you can find a better option that's going to play every week and is going to get an early price rise, then that might be necessary because Ledger might turn out okay. He does look like he's got a good points per minutes potential, but if he keeps being the sub, it might take him a really long time to actually rise in price. Like, even if he, say, he gets 3 or 4 games in a row and then is the sub, it might really stunt his growth in price. So that has me worried a little bit and has me looking at players like Green or if Kennedy, if I didn't have him. On top of that, Kennedy opens up the MPP thing. So, yeah, I'd be pretty tempted by that this week, personally.
I guess that you're right, Mark. That major concern is that he might, in fact, be that go-to sub guy because of the impact that they think he can have when he gets on. You don't want to get a gaff into your team, for example, although he did finish really strongly last year. All right, on to Rhys Stanley, also, again, by Dr. Bones, stud or dud. He's 176K, I think, in the forward line. Is that right, Mark?
Yeah, do you know what he scored the first 2 weeks?
80 and 101.
Crazy scores. The thing is, I don't expect him to keep doing that. I expect that St Kilda have got a good 3 or 4 weeks in front of them, but then their draw does get a lot tougher. And you got to remember they played Port Adelaide round one and Gold Coast round two. So I think their scores are inflated a lot. He's been in the system for a while. That's the thing that is an advantage. And he's going to come on at some stage. And I don't expect him to average 85 from here, but I think he could average 65, 70. So that's probably not enough from someone that's valued at 170, but he's definitely looking a lot better than Cripps at this stage.
If you look at the scoring table from those two games, that most St Kilda's players scored pretty well. I was surprised to see that the spread of points was fairly even in that first game, and quite a lot of people scored above 70. So Stanley, relative to the rest of his teammates, you know, isn't a particularly high scorer. So I'm going to agree with you, Mark, in saying that not as confident, because if you thought that he was going to average 90, it would obviously be a clear in. So having said that, does St Kilda's draw really toughen up that much more moving forward, or how's it looking? I think Western Bulldogs, Fremantle, Melbourne,
then the Hawks, Carlton, West Coast at Patterson's, Sydney. Yeah. That's a pretty tough 4 weeks. Then Richmond, Gold Coast, Adelaide. So it does soften up a little bit, but I think they're going to be in a bit of trouble in those 4 weeks.
And you'd be looking at him to be not a keeper, but a cash cow. So prime trading out times would be 6, 7, 8, and 9, which is when he has that really tough run of opposition. So there's a lot of money to be putting into a player who's played against only Port Adelaide and Gold Coast. So I guess it's a no from both of us. And really, people only would be looking at him like downgrading a mid-price or a forward, I guess.
Yeah. I just wouldn't expect his scoring to continue. But if you do have him, good on you for picking him at the start.
Yep. And Malera, will he score this well against better sides? Again, from Dr. Bones.
My thoughts are probably not. He in the sample last year, he only averaged 67. I'm not sure how moving up to the AFL, he can increase his average by 20 points, like he has in the first 2 weeks. I think that he probably got a fair bit of an advantage playing round one back in South Australia, and then round two against the Gold Coast, fairly easy game. So personally, don't expect him to keep averaging 85. I think he's the sort of player that could find a low game here or there that could really stunt his price growth. But I know a lot of people are big fans of Molero, so I don't want to sort of talk everyone out of it, because I think a lot of people are going to be heading in that direction this week, especially as a corrective for someone that's either not playing or scoring really poorly on your forward bench. What do
Yep.
you think?
Agree with you there, Mark. I don't think that he's going to keep scoring those 85s. And that's really important to keep in mind, because I'd probably see 60 to 70 moving forward. I guess most people would be looking toward the upper end. So if I'm going to concede there and say he averages 70 going forward, is it still worth playing? And some people are thinking trading out players like Tory Dixon for him, for example. Do you think that Tory Dixon, given that we think that his job security is all right, and that he won't be the sub every single game, and probably will average, I'm not sure what you think, but I'd probably think 50 to 60. Is he then worth trading to Molero, who I see as 70?
If those projections are right, then certainly it's not worth a trade. I don't think you're just not making enough money out of that upgrade. But look, if you think that Malira is going to continue to average 80 plus, and you think Dixon's going to be the sub a lot, or he's going to lose his job pretty soon, then that would make a good trade. So I think you've got to sort of back your own judgment here. My judgment is that I have Dixon and I don't have Malira, but I won't be making that trade.
Yep, and I agree with that, and I'm not going to do that either. So, next from Dr. Bones, Aaron Hall, can he improve or will he be dropped? Hall to Molero, would you do that if you had that situation, Mark?
Yeah, it's funny because Hall's probably actually done a little bit better than Dixon so far, but I'd probably be more inclined to do that trade. I just don't have great projections of Hall going forward. He was subbed on the weekend, so that's not great. I'd be pretty tempted by that one. What do you think, Marcus?
I guess, like you said, Mark, that Hall hasn't really played that much poorly. And if you look at the two, that pretty much done pretty similar things across their two games. But I think playing for Gold Coast as a small forward, that's a lot worse. And if he's going to be a sub candidate, I mean, we look at Matera last year, and he did all right doing that, but he still managed a pretty iffy average apart from his huge games. I don't think Hall, having been drafted as a mature age recruit, has quite that talent to just be like, boom, here's a massive game, especially playing for a team like Gold Coast. So you're going to see a fairly consistently low scoring pattern from him. I'm more confident in Dixon. I'd be more inclined to say yes to Hall to Molero than I would be Dixon to Molero, because I could see Hall doing, 40 to 50 type averages.
And a lot of that comes back to our pre-season projections here as well, that we both projected Dixon would do better than Hall before the season even started. So maybe that's sort of influencing our judgment here. If you had Hall, would you be moving him to Kennedy or even Dixon himself?
I wouldn't be moving him to Dixon. I would be moving him to the likes of Kennedy, Milera, and Green would be the people I'm looking at. Devon Smith, I assume everyone has. Should we talk about him briefly, Mark? Would you trade him to Devon Smith? Have you been disappointed by him?
I think a few people have been disappointed because I think he had 100 and a 79 in two NAB games, but I think I actually went in with lower expectations than that because there were probably slightly exceptional circumstances in both those games. So 55 from a rookie compared to all the other options like Dixon, Hall, Payne, Smets. I think he's doing pretty well and he offers you the MPP and he's looked all right. I've been fairly impressed with when he's got the ball for Greater Western Sydney. So yeah, I've been pretty happy with Smith. And at this stage, he probably hasn't done enough to be trading him in, but he seems the sort of player that if he can average 55 and then just 1 week just pull out 100 or 110, then he could get quite a decent jump with his price before you trade him out. So that's what I'm hoping for there.
Okay, now we're going to finish with the rookies with the final question from Dr. Bones. Just really a summation of the rookies. Do you really need to nail all your rookies to make your mark? Don't think Prompts did last year. That's impromptu, the winner of Supercoach. And Marcus, you missed Heppel, and I also missed Kerno, and finished higher than most. I finished 180. As far as I can tell, there just aren't that many must-have rooks kicking out hundreds priced below the 100K figure this year. Magna may be the only must-have at this stage, and maybe there are more to come later. So I guess really, Mark, how do you see the rookie landscape Are there rookies that you absolutely have to trade in going forward? Who are the rookies that people should be looking at definitely bringing in? And if you want to put a rule to it, like how poor does a job security or scoring potential have to be to trade to a player like Miller that we've talked about?
Sure. Just first, I want to give props to Impromptu for his ad on Supercoach. We watched that just before, Marcus.
Yeah, we did.
It's quite a funny and impressive ad that he's now got on Fox Footy. So good on you, Impromptu, for cashing in on your fame. In regards to the question, I think that, as Bone said, Magna's the only absolute must-have this year. But at this stage, last year we were sort of saying, is Heppel a must-have, is Kerno a must-have? And there was actually some debate about that. It wasn't entirely clear. So I think there probably is going to be one or two rookies that that in hindsight we're going to say, gee, it would have been a great idea to get them in at that time. Personally, I'm looking at Green as one that I've got my eye on this week as a potential trade target, because he scored 80s in both his first two games. He's had 27 and 33 touches. He was an absolute fantasy beast as a junior. So he shows a lot of potential to me, disposal efficiency being his major concern. Malera seems to be the other one that everyone's talking about. I think if you don't have McDonald, I'd be looking at him in the next couple of weeks after he plays his second game. I think Shield's going to really improve. He might end up actually being a better player or scoring more than Green or a Kennedy type, but that's obviously really difficult to predict at this stage. There's no one else really that stands out. I think if you didn't have Kennedy, gee, he just racks the ball up. I'm really impressed with what I've seen by Kennedy. He didn't score quite so well on the weekend, but I'm really happy with what I've seen from him. What do you think about the question?
I agree with you there, Mark. Only Magna's probably the only one I'd definitely be looking at bringing in. I guess McDonald could potentially be one, but he's suspended, so you've got time to really look at that. Ellis, we were thinking that maybe that was going to happen, but not really. People are getting their hopes up about Bug and Moore, but after watching GWS, not really. And yeah, there's no one really that stands out. I guess I really feel strongly about the rookie at R2 strategy. So I guess if there was a further correction that I'd made to say you want to have those rookies on field, if I had a two premium strategy and some of the premiums have been struggling in the ruck, then I'd say, you know, maybe look at Giles to have definitely on field, because he's averaging 94 at the moment. And I think it was definitely a mistake if you didn't start him on field.
Yeah, I agree with that at this stage. I mean, the major point that we made on the podcast preseason was you want to have your best scoring rookie on the field. Giles looked like being that player, and that's basically borne out so far.
Yep. All right, now off to the rookies and on to the mid-prices with a question by, this is a tough one, R33GTSTJet. Mid-priced madness, is it worth it? People are jumping on all over the place. And I guess we're referring to the likes of Malcheski and Lake and Bauer and Clark. So, Mark, how do you feel about that? Is it worth side-swapping to different mid-prices if you have underperforming mid-prices? Is it worth downgrading from poorly performing premiums? How do you feel about the mid-prices, Mark?
Sure. So that's from Damian Burke on Twitter, who goes on to say that he thinks that the it's all luck at the moment, and it's going to start leveling out once trading gets serious, and the mid prices can't keep up with the Guns and rookies forever. Personally, and I think you're the same, Marcus, we're probably, of elite coaches out there, we're probably more inclined towards the mid price strategy than a lot of other coaches, and looking for a bit more value. So our answers are probably going to, and both our teams have a few mid prices in them. So we're both going to be hoping that the mid price strategy keeps going. And I think not exposing yourself too much to on-field scores from rookies at the start of the year is not a bad thing. And rookie scores aren't always going to be like they are, like they were in round one, where GWS just got a lot of points against Sydney. So I think, I'm hoping that the mid-price rule is going to keep going. What do you think?
Obviously, feeling the same way with the amount of mid-prices we have in our team. But just looking at, for example, if you had Martin and you had, let's say, Payne from Collingwood, would you, let's say, trade Payne and Jackson out for maybe Malcheski and Paul Plesier or Dangerfield? Like, is there a correction to that extent worthwhile, where you'd be like, I may have made a mistake and overexposed myself to rookie risk, and maybe I made an incorrect premium choice. Now, do I use this opportunity to go bam, bam, two mid prices, Or do you go, they're still mid-prices, they're the risk attached to that, and maybe I back my decision and say, I'm going to stick to my GNR. Do you think that GNR should be conceding ground to us at this stage?
No, I wouldn't be doing that yet if I had that approach. I think part of the strategy with Guns and Rookies is that it's possible you might actually get off to a little bit of a slow start, because if your premiums or your rookies aren't performing quite at the level, then you're going to get low points. But as your team builds cash, then you're going to catch up. And I think if you went with that approach at the start of the year, I think you've just got to back it in from here and hope for the best. I think that the best strategy for this year was probably a little bit more mid-price than it was last year. But look, if you've gone a Guns and Rookies approach, I'd just be backing it in personally, wouldn't you?
Yeah, I got to agree with you there. So always back your preseason judgment. And even though two rounds is a better information set than just one round, it still is only two games to go off. And, you know, we've seen players come out of rough patches a lot longer than two rounds and held the faith there. So it's easy to get sort of sold by, you know, prices haven't changed, might as well get all these corrective trades done. No, I'd agree with you, Mark. Even though we are of the mid-pricer mindset, if you have the strict GNR, I probably wouldn't make those type of corrective trades either. So on to a Facebook question by Jamie Murphy, and that's about Dempsey. Can Dempsey maintain a 100-plus average? And that's Courtney Dempsey from Essendon, who returned from an injury-afflicted year last year and just absolutely out of the blocks, Mark. You'd know better than I would. And I remember Faz brought him up in the preseason, and I was just like, what, Courtney Dempsey? Really? But he's 98 and 111 and priced at 273K. And in the back line where, you know, scoring's already weak, how do you feel about his selection?
Yeah, he's not going to maintain a 100-plus average if that's what he's asking, but I think he's still going to turn out to be a decent pick. I don't expect him to get 23 touches every week like he did on the weekend, and Essendon do have a pretty good draw at the start of the year, so basically, up until the bye, Essendon's draw is pretty good. So I'd be looking to keep a player like Dempsey till the bye and then trading him out. I think he could almost match some of the premiums considering some of the scores that we've seen so far. I think an 85 average is probably not out of the question, and that's pretty good for the price he'd be paying. And that's pretty close to keeping up with a lot of the premium defenders. So Dempsey actually looks a better player after coming back from his knee injury. There's obviously some concerns that he might hurt himself again at some stage, but everything that he did was class. He really looks to have made himself into quite a good player for the Bombers. So I'm actually a bit excited about Dempsey, and he's surprised me a little bit.
Okay, so from a non-Essendon supporter, in 2009, 19 games, 2010, 20 games, 2011, 4 games, 2012, 2 games. His average from those seasons reads 75, 77, 51, and 56. So even though I agree he's playing some great football at the moment, I'm not sure I'd be going and trading into him. I'd much prefer, and I don't think many coaches would have, you know, all four of Malcheski, Lake, Bauer, and Clark. And I'm not saying those are the only ones to get, but just, you know, that's what I know of my team. And to me, they all seem like better options than Dempsey. So, and I mean, you still got others. Really? You wouldn't say so, Mark?
I'd have Dempsey ahead of Bauer.
Okay.
If Lake had of not performed this week and Lake had of scored 40, I would probably be doing Lake to Dempsey this week.
All right. I think I've been wary of, in the past, I've traded in players who have shown good patches of form and shown that they can do good things, but have not had that scoring history in the hope that they'd move up. And I think Kozietski a couple of years ago was a mistake. CB a couple of years ago was a mistake. And I'm very wary of players like that without that scoring history. So that's probably where I'm at with it. But like you said, he is playing some really good football at the moment. And moving forward, you'd think that he will definitely improve on his price. And there's no real downside, I guess. It's just the extent of the upside, and I guess that's good enough to sell, you know, a fair amount of people into him. And I see on the forums people asking stuff like, will Dempsey be the most traded in player this week? And with the football he's playing at the moment, I guess that's a valid question.
Yeah, I don't think he's going to become a premium, and I think you're probably going to need to trade him again. So I probably wouldn't be like doing a Broughton downgrade to him or something like that.
All right, now another mid-price question from Facebook from Craig Butterfield. What do you think of Chad Corns, Mark? Now, to be honest, I wasn't even looking at him in the preseason, and looking at his selection figures, only 5,900 coaches did end up selecting him. Available in the forward line this year, priced at 378,000, scored 104 and 121 in his first two games. And he's playing as sort of a third tall after Moore and Davis in the back line. And he's the general defender, the defensive general down there. And looking at that selection, and the only real concern is injury, because he's going to keep getting the ball. He's going to keep peeling off the third forward, never really that much of a threat in most teams. And his role isn't as accountable, but the players will always look to go to him because he's the only one with a senior head, and they all look pretty flustered when there's nobody to kick to up ahead.
He seems to be taking a lot of marks from opposition kicks as well. He's sort of chipping in as the third man up or the loose man in defence. And Chad Corns is a fantasy stud. He averaged 117 back in 2007. I know that was a long time ago in a much better team, but he does have a really, really strong fantasy scoring history. The injury concern would probably be the biggest one. And who are you exactly going to trade to him? Like, what are people thinking? Like a Martin to him or something like that? Those things would worry me a fair bit. One of my friends did mention his name to me in the preseason, and I thought sort of that, gee, that's a very high risk selection. I probably wouldn't be going there, but he's looked fantastic the first couple of weeks, and I think he's angry and got a real point to prove to Port Adelaide and say, hey guys, I'm still a really good player. You guys shouldn't have let me go. So, and I think he'll probably do that this year. Yeah. And I mean, you think of what Bock did last year as well. Like, Bock scored pretty well for Greater Western Sydney.
And he's their number one defender, let alone, you know, that third tall, like you said, always gets that floating job. And yeah, I really like his selection. Like, the only thing is injury. So I think I'm going to stay away for now, but it's going to really hurt to see him continually fire until he goes down with injury. Hopefully,
just aware that it's a massive gamble because of the injury history, I think. But if he was back eligible, I'd be much more likely to pick him. But I don't think he is. I think he's only a forward. So that probably worries me out of him more than anything.
Yeah, if he was eligible in the back line, I think he'd be coming in for most teams this week. Moving on to the forum question from Mick Scroll, and this is moving into premium territory now. I'd like to hear your thoughts on sideways premium trades, say Pav to Cloak, for example, with the goal to both increase scoring and generate some cash. So talking sideways swaps, Mark, how do you feel about that? I know it's a fairly hot topic at this time of year and tends to be every year, but I think our answer tends to be fairly standard. So, Mark, I'll let you rip into this one.
I know what your standard answer is going to be, and that's don't do it, never, ever do it. Back in your judgment from the preseason. What if you feel like you've got information that you didn't have preseason, like Pavlich? You think, gee, I didn't realize he was going to just sit at full forward.
I did.
And now he is. I know that you did, but say you weren't aware of that.
Yeah, And sorry, now I just feel had like to throw got in that brag one quickly. Yeah,
I see. And now you feel you've got new information. So is that a decent reason to trade? Because I think in the past I've sort of thought, no way, you've got to back your premiums. You've got to keep your premiums no matter what. But I know that Impromptu, when he was on the show last year, was a strong advocate of if you make a mistake, you need to fix it straight away.
Yeah, and I think Nick Riewoldt to Jack Darling last year was a prime example of a trade that would have rocketed you up to pretty much top 500 guaranteed, I would have said, if you didn't do anything ridiculous after that. And that's how big a decision like that can be. Darling was a huge rookie that a few people missed out on. And Riewoldt just absolutely went down in flames, and that got you 400K. So
that's a different situation, though, isn't it? That's not Pav to Cloak, that's Pav to Malira.
Yeah. Sorry about that. But I think bring that up because just acknowledging the fact that your premium might not be the player he is, like acknowledging that Nick Riewoldt last year wasn't going to average 100 or 110 like what people were hoping for, and then trading him to someone like Pavlich, and that could have been a really common trade that if people identified that last year, I think the difference in the end would have netted you about 30 points per game for the rest of the season. And if you asked anyone that, they'd take that any day of the week. So, I mean, there is a point in considering that, but I'm not sure how many premium options that you can absolutely run a line through this season. I think Pav is one that we're talking about. I think some people are looking at Rockcliffe because he's been playing more midfield, more time forward in the forward line, and I think Greg Broughton. And I think those three would be probably the most extreme three in terms of commonly selected premiums that aren't doing well. Can you see any others that are worse than that, Mark? Because looking at those three,
Martin probably comes into that as well.
Martin. Apart from those four, I don't see much else. And looking at those four, I'd say that you'd be more than happy to back all of them in for the remainder of the year, or at least until the bye. Because remember, we will have to side swap this year around the bye, so you do get an out.
If you have an underperforming premium, you can get rid of them halfway through the year. And Pab's draw does probably open up a little bit more. I know Cloaks looked fantastic early in the season. I'd back them to pretty much average pretty similar for the rest of the year. Maybe Cloak might get 10 points a game more, maybe.
Yeah,
And if he does, maybe that's a good decision to get to make the trade, because 10 points a game is like 200 points by the end of the season, which is about, I think, what you're looking for from a trade. If you're going to get 200 points, you should probably go for it. Would you agree?
I'd say so, but I don't think you can rule with confidence on any of those, and that's why side swapping is so dangerous. Because yes, and all your trades look way more attractive early in the season, because when you multiply it out by 20, the benefits look awesome. So, and early traders have typically done well in previous years of Supercoach, but with side swapping, it's a lot more dangerous. I'd rather, much rather, that Riewoldt to Darling scenario, where if you feel like there's a premium that's underperforming, I'd say why don't you go down to a rookie that you really like or that you've missed out on, and then take that 400K and fix another part of your ground, or maybe hit your upgrades up hard when you get them in round five, and then it'll set you up for your upgrades for 2 to 3 rounds of really aggressive upgrading. And I mean, last year, if you did Riewoldt to, and I'm keep you going back to the example, and obviously that's the absolute extreme, but there's a lot of potential in that. Whereas I think if you're looking at side swapping, the potential Riewoldt to Pav in as compared to Riewoldt to Darling, it's while still a good trade, it's, the effects are still nowhere as near as good as if you just went to Darling and got that cash. So I think there's a lot less risk involved in the action of downgrading than side swapping, and I'm risk averse when it comes to trades this early in the season, when we're especially when we're talking just correction, not upgrades, just correction.
Okay, so this moves us to the next question. Is Pendles a must-have worth burning another premium for? And this is a discussion that we've sort of had, Marcus, and that's we both have Daisy Thomas in our midfields, and Daisy's had 95 and 100, so hasn't been setting the world on fire so far. If I didn't have Pendles, would it be worth me burning a trade and getting rid of Thomas to bring Pendles in?
I'm more than happy to admit, and this is only 2 rounds out, that not starting Pendlebury was absolutely a mistake. Definitely want to bring him in, and I think the only thing, real thing that would be stopping you is if you already have 2 round 12 buy premiums. You're talking about side swapping Dale Thomas up to Scotty P. I guess then you've got to ask, where's that 100K coming from?
So it's probably a double trade.
The only real way I'd see you getting a Pendlebury in wouldn't really necess I wouldn't really be looking at a side swap as much as downgrade somewhere else, a mistake somewhere else on your field. Let's say you really don't like Martin and you really like Adam Kennedy. You go Martin to Kennedy, and let's say you pick Ledger and you really don't like Ledger. You can go Ledger to Pendlebury. Let's say
You
you
can't do
could,
that, though.
yeah. But let's say you could do that. That's how I'd see Pendlebury coming into your team more so than doing that side swap. And remember, with the side swap, all your other premiums aren't going to hit your Pendlebury money anyway. So I don't know. You're going to need cash in bank to bring Pendlebury in. And I guess that's the thing that hurts the most, is that we made that blunder, and it's one of the hardest things to fix just because of his price tag. And I think most of us are just going to have to deal with it.
I certainly don't want to be saying I told you so, but that's why I picked him at the start, is because I just realized it was going to be so hard to find the money to get him in. I may as well spend it at the start. If we didn't have Ablett, I think it would be more pressing to get him in because we'd have a permanent captaincy choice. But with Ablett sitting there going to average probably about the same, I think that makes it less urgent. Definitely a mistake not to start him, but I'd be trying to find a way to upgrade him to him rather than be swapping one of my midfield premiums out personally.
Okay, so let's say we take the worst case scenario, or I feel the common one of the commonly selected midfield premiums that probably is looking the most iffy, and that's Rockcliffe after a 69. Although he'd had an absolutely stellar game in the first round, it's just he has been playing a lot more time up forward, and they're not going to play Melbourne every round. Would you, let's say you could get the cash, would you do a Rockcliffe to Pendlebury? And like I said, that would probably be the most likely situation I'd see happening, or the best case for side swapping a premium to Pendlebury. Would you do that trade, Mark?
When you put it like that, yeah, I probably would.
So you would draw the line at certain premiums?
Like Thomas is probably on the borderline, but like Selwood, Ablett, Mitchell, Murphy, these sort of guys, I'm not trading them to Pendlebury.
Now on to a Twitter question from PKD73, and I think he writes for Dream Team Talk. To Broughton or not to Broughton, Mark?
That is the question. I have Broughton currently, do you?
No, I do not.
Oh, you lucky bastard.
Yeah, not lucky. It's a smart planning, Mark.
excellent. Well, Scotland and Shaw were more expensive than Broughton, and they haven't scored that much more than him. Except for Goddard and Deledio, the expensive back premiums just aren't scoring that well. So that looks like your structure of just having the two good ones in your back line is going to work out pretty well, Marcus.
Yeah, and I guess having said that then, Mark, you wouldn't see yourself side-swapping Broughton? Definitely not, I'd say.
There's nobody that I'm interested in. If there is, it might be like a Birchall or someone who is a round 13 buy problem, considering I've already got Goddard and Deledio. I've already got Lake and I've already got Malcheski. If I didn't have Malcheski, I might consider the sideways trade. If Corns was a defender, I might consider that sort of trade. I like what you were saying with the Rewalt Darling thing. I prefer to give myself some sort of restructure as well with the trade. So, like, I prefer to give myself a bit of money as well rather than just a clear side swap to a premium. I kind of feel like that's a bit of a waste and I should probably just back in my premiums in that instance. But if I could get down to, like, if I thought Hargrave was going to score 90 for the year, I'd probably do that. But, look, Broughton's had Geelong and Sydney in the first 2 weeks. He played on SJ week one. They really struggled against the Swans for a lot of the game. I'm willing to back Broughton in here. Like, I picked him at the start of the year. I think you've just got to hope that he comes good. Like, if he loses money, a lot of other back premiums are as well. Like, yeah, I just don't think it's worth burning a trade at this stage. I kind of feel like in previous seasons I've been quite willing to do these early trades, but with only two on the bench this year and the buys all together later in the year, as you mentioned, with the side swapping around, I really want to have as many trades as I can, and saving a trade now so it will allow me to do a side trade later. So yeah, it's to keep Broughton for me. If you had him, what do you think you'd do?
Yeah, I think I definitely agree with you there. I would definitely not be looking at side swapping him. If I didn't have Malcheski, I might be looking at getting him. He did score 80 and 104 in his first 2 weeks, so I think he's a pretty good selection. And yeah, I'd only be looking to downgrade him, but really, you're going to have to, like I said, back your preseason judgment, and it's a common theme, and always happens every round two, and back your preseason judgment. I definitely agree with Mark. They got really tough first two games, and he has trained in the midfield, and he has looked really good while preseason, and your defensive premiums are going to be like that anyway. And the good thing about Broughton is his scoring potential is just so high. And last year, he went on that run where he scored, 140 for quite a few rounds. And that was enough to save his season from being dismal to passable with a 93 average. So I definitely say stick with Broughton, because if you ask me, will he be in the top seven defenders at the end of the year? Be leaning toward yes. If you said top 10, definitely, most definitely. So I can't see you trading him out. Personally.
So I just want to clarify something that we've spoken about a few times tonight, and that is backing your judgment in from the preseason. I think with the premiums, you really need to do that almost 100%. Just back in the premiums that you've chosen. If they haven't had a great start, hopefully they'll come good. When it comes to rookies, it is a little bit different because we don't necessarily have all the information available preseason that we do with the premiums. So we're actually gaining a lot of new information in the first couple of rounds regarding job security and scoring potential. So when it comes to rookies, we're probably a bit more inclined to make those trades than we are with the premiums.
Yeah, definitely agree with you there, Mark. And the same goes with mid-prices really as well. Obviously, you're going to back them more than you would your rookies, and you don't want to completely throw all out the window. But, last year, for example, and a lot of people pick their mid-prices based on preseason form and for good reason, but when it hits real season stuff and you realize they're just not going to do it, like Andreas Everett last year. Yeah,
Corrective trade straight away. Yeah.
So, a bit of smart decision making probably goes a long way. Don't just follow blindly blindly adhere to arbitrary rules that people in the community set out. Okay, now on to Kabossi's question from Twitter. Dean Cox, trade to cruiser rider type or wait? And I think that's a pretty interesting one that could probably be extended to a few more underperforming bonafide premiums. Mumford would be one of them, and with cruiser and rider doing so well, Nat Nui could probably be lumped into that, although he's slightly more expensive. It's a very pertinent question this week. Mark, how do you feel about it?
It is a really tough question, I think. And I'd kind of be tempted to do Cox probably more to rider than cruiser personally. I sort of, after week one, I was on cruiser more than rider, but I just think rider, the fact that he plays 22 every year, is a huge advantage. So if I was going to pick one, I'd probably be picking rider, but maybe even Knight and Nui at 500,000. He looked like he's had an absolute ripping start to the year. Probably just doesn't have quite the durability. I think that it was fairly clear what they were going to do with Cox preseason, that they were going to play him a bit more up forward and give Knight and Nui more time on the ball. I think a little bit of that has to do with they're trying to save Cox for finals to make sure that he's fit and firing come the end of the year, which he wasn't last year, and I think it really cost them going into the finals. So I actually expect Cox to have a better second half after the year than first half, which he is opposite of what he did last year. But I do definitely think that he is overpriced and he's not going to average 120 again this year. So I'd be pretty tempted by that, given the fact that you can make 160,000, or with the cruiser one, you can make like 250,000. What do you think? It's kind of hard to trade out a premium that's playing. What do you think?
Yeah, well, I mean, Dean Cox is just that expensive, 662,000, and cruiser is just that cheap, 418,000. Netting 260,000 from that trade, and the points differential might even be toward cruiser's way. Definitely, I think that's an excellent trade to make. Having said that, some teams may have a lot more to fix before then. But if you're talking about, you know, where can I be using my trades effectively? If I offered you 260,000 for a maybe 10 point per game loss, but maybe even 10 point per game gain, you'd take that any day of the week. So I think that if you don't have other trades to make, that's absolutely a really great trade to be looking at. And it's why I'm maybe looking at Mumford going down to cruiser as well. And obviously that's dependent on his injury. And yeah, it was a bit disappointing in the first week, but then again, Sydney weren't really on the money either. So yeah. How about the other ruck options, Mark?
What do you think about the Ryder or Knight Inui trade? Cause you're only getting 160,000 there, but I personally think you're going to get a much better, more reliable scorer than you would with cruiser.
Oh, you're much more confident of Nat Nui and Ryder over cruiser.
I am a lot more confident of those two, yeah.
Sure. I think that I'm probably not as gung-ho on Ryder, even though he's had an absolutely sublime start, because I've seen that he's previously been inconsistent, and he's not a player that I can be definitely sure that he's going to keep that. And I don't know, if I had... And a lot of people do, and I'm sorry, I do have, and a lot of other people do have this, the rookie at R2, that Ryder would be one that I'd just like to keep as an option, because I think that he's going to have a poor game somewhere down the track, and he's more likely to fall in price than a cruiser or Nat Nui type. And considering you're netting 100K less, I'd much prefer just grab that 100K and look toward round five really excitedly, because I'm 200K ahead of the curve.
Yeah, I just think cruiser, he was going to be lucky to score 80 before junking it up in the last 5 minutes and kicking a goal. Like, I think he got a very flattering score on the weekend of 100 in what was essentially a really big win from Carlton. So maybe I expected a bit more from him on the weekend.
I guess,
and there's also concerns with Warnock coming back, because I think Warnock probably will come back into the side. I don't think Hampson at this stage has shown quite enough, and Warnock is going to be playing on the ball most of the time, which is probably going to force cruiser forward a bit more.
Yeah, and that's definitely the most concerning point about his selection. But I don't know, when you put Nat Nui next to cruiser, and was it they were drafted one or was it 2 years apart?
I'm not sure.
Anyway, cruiser, they're both number one draft picks, except cruiser's older. And
Nat Nui was number two, Matt.
Oh, well, there you go. Although I think most people would argue that he should have been number one.
I think Melbourne are thinking that right now.
Yeah. So, I don't know, when you stack them up against each other and you go moving forward, do you think that Carlton also, you know, looking really like a top four side? And West Coast, even though you could argue that same point, has had, you know, three key injuries to players in their best 22 in Embley, Lacroix and Nikoski, that and having come from a much more inexperienced base, that you'd argue that Cruiser having that same pedigree could at 100k less is equally or if not much more attractive. But yeah, I don't, that Warnock is a huge concern, and I'd definitely be looking very closely at Nat Nui. And I think in the preseason, Mark, both you and I were looking at Nat Nui and Cruiser coming in for Mumford, and I think we're both regretting not going for the cheaper ruckman at this stage.
Yeah, absolutely. At this stage we are. But then, I mean, Mumford's played one game for 96, and if he hadn't pulled out on the weekend and had scored 100, I probably wouldn't be feeling so bad. So I think the other thing with Cruiser is there's got to be some sort of injury concerns as well there. And I would hate to trade Cox to Cruiser and then have to trade again. That just sort of brings me back to the CB debacle of a few years ago. Like, I think you do want to be picking someone as your ruckman that's going to be pretty reliable and play a lot of games. So
yeah.
In that sense, maybe you're actually better off just keeping Cox, because he does have a really good record of playing out seasons even when he gets injured. So maybe it's more you're better off just keeping Cox.
Yeah, and it definitely is. It's a smart trade, but it's also, you know, a luxury trade considering a lot of people will be looking at more serious corrective trades. So, yeah, do keep that in mind. Now, on to our last question for the show from Facebook, from Kane Williams. Is Jack Riewoldt the wrong Riewoldt, Mark?
For the rest of the season, I don't think so. But in the short term and starting in your starting team, he probably was. Just because Richmond have such a tough start, whereas St Kilda have such a great start, I haven't been all that impressed by Nick Riewoldt so far. He seems able to pull out the good scores, and I know he kicked four on the weekend, but I really felt that he looked old. He wasn't sort of as imposing as he has been in the past. And I think that probably three seasons ago or two seasons ago, he would have scored 160 plus against Gold Coast at Etihad. And so I think he's definitely on the decline. I think that he's going to be managed through his injury this year, as you've mentioned on the podcast on numerous occasions.
Yep.
But I think Jack actually looks pretty fit. I think Jack looks like he's going to get a lot of the ball, just going to struggle against a good opposition. But in the second half of the year, when Richmond have a better draw, I think it will open up for Jack Riewoldt. And if he stays fit, he could be quite a good scorer.
Yeah, definitely agree with you there, Mark. I couldn't have said it better myself. And, you know, Nick Riewoldt has played against Port Adelaide and Gold Coast, so his poor score hasn't come yet, and Jack Riewoldt has. So you extrapolated a few rounds into the future like Mark has, and yeah, I'd say that Jack Riewoldt would probably start to trump Nick as the season wears on.
So if you've got Jack, are you keeping him?
Oh, absolutely, yeah. I think you pick a player like Jack Riewoldt going, I expect these poor scores, but I also expect that his big scores, and Jack Riewoldt's capable of, you know, that 160 type scores are absolutely dominating a game, that those will serve to lift his average to one that's good enough to make him worth selecting. So, and he's a premium selection, or if you picked him assuming that he was going to be premium or at least be premium until the buy, and you've got to, again, with your premiums, back your judgment and keep him in your team, because, you know, last year he averaged 80 or something, and we had him in our teams. Yeah, we saw how much he was struggling, and then we heard how many surgeries he had. I think four different problems, and still went out every week and still did a good job. And still, you know, I think he still hit tons, I think, throughout the year. So moving forward this year with a fit body, and Richmond are on the improve, we have seen that Riewoldt's going to be a good option. They're not going to play Collingwood every week.
Yep, I think we should probably wrap it up soon here, mate. You're 1 point in front. Hopefully that lead dissipates over the weekend and I can get 100 or so points up early on in the season.
Yeah, I look forward to continuing this rivalry, Mark. Andrew Swallow's going to pip you with some big scores. I can feel it already. So good luck for the upcoming round, guys. All the best. We hope this podcast helps. It's a really big week in Supercoach, that pre-price change round. So hopefully you make the right decisions and you set yourself up for the rest of the season. All the best.
And if you liked the format tonight, then let us know in the comments on the blog. And we might go the same thing next week. So send us some questions through on Twitter, Facebook, or come to the forums and do so.
Yep. Thanks very much, guys. See ya. Don't want to make you crazy. Don't want to make you crazy. Yeah.